Yeah, here we go. We're on the Davey Weir today. Thanks for coming on, big man.
No problem. Looking forward to it.
I must say, I love the ones and twos. They're looking well.
Thank you very much. I'll not tell you where I got them, but they look better than...
They do, mate. They look great. I need to ask you a few tips. I'm 30, still playing, and I'm like a slug on crutches. With you played in the Champions League at 40, putting cigars out. What's the secret? Give us a few tips.
I needed the money. That was the reason. So I had to keep going.
I've no got chance.
Four kids. And I was lucky. I had a good manager. I had a manager who trusted me. So came up to Rangers at, I think it was 36, 37. I thought coming to the end of my career and having three or four months up in Glasgow and just try to help out a wee bit, and it turned into 5 years. And you know, having a manager that trusts you, not looking at your birth certificate, but looking at what you're doing day to day, that was the biggest thing for me. So I was just fortunate the way it worked out.
You're a Rolls Royce, mate. Right, we'll go back to the start of the career. And I only found it last night. Started in America.
I did.
How was that?
Because I wasn't good enough to play in Scotland, so I had to go and find somewhere else where I could play football. So I got the opportunity to go on a scholarship to Indiana. Evansville, Indiana, small place in the middle of America. You would never go there if you didn't. Somebody hadn't asked you to go there. So turned up there and had 4 great years and wouldn't change it for the world.
And I seen on Wikipedia that you were a striker.
I was. I started off as a defender. And the striker, a lad called Rob Patterson, got injured. He was the top goal scorer in the country. So he got injured, so we were really struggling. So the coach had a great idea of putting me up front. And I went up front and I couldn't stop scoring, so...
What kind of goals were we talking? Tap-ins or...?
Just everything. I was big, obviously. I was tall and I could actually play a little bit back then. So it just worked, you know, and I was scoring goals and I loved it, you know, as everybody does scoring goals. It's definitely there.
How would that upbringing compare to a Scottish... somebody coming through a Scottish academy?
It was just like living on your own. So when I first went to America, I'd never been in a plane before. I'd never been abroad before. And went down to Prestwick, got the plane. My mum and dad dropped me off. My dad was in tears, and I was like, what's going on here? My dad was in tears, I'm leaving home. Had to get 3 flights, had to fly from Glasgow to New York, missed my flight in New York. So had to transfer for LaGuardia JFK, which was, you can imagine, 18-year-olds in New York, driving across New York, trying to get a flight. From New York to Detroit, Detroit to St. Louis. So I came in a different plane for the one I was meant to come in. So the lad I was meeting didn't know where I was. Arrived in St. Louis, just walking around the airport, didn't have a clue who I was coming to meet. Bumped into this Irish lad who became a really good friend of mine, saying, "You David Weir?" I was like, "Yes, I'm." He was like, "I'm Obi." Picked me up and we had to drive 3 hours from St. Louis to where I was going. So it was like an ordeal and just thrown into the middle of this small town in Indiana. And like, overnight you're in doing a pre-season, heat's like through the roof, 100 degrees, humidity, and it was just surreal thinking back, you know, you just, you know, what you went to try and get a game of football,
things
where you went, what you did.
Football, eh? Exactly. And what was the coaching like over there?
It was, the environment was unbelievable, it was so professional, you know, there was maybe 3,000 or 4,000 at a game, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 at a game, facilities were fantastic, gym, you know, 20 years ahead its time in the UK. You were studying as well, so going to university, really like enjoyable social life, you know, a bunch of lads were travelling all over the country, flying to San Francisco, flying to Portland, where else did we fly? We flew to Florida, we drove, you know, like 14-hour bus journeys, just where you can imagine what it was like. It was just good fun. And then in the off-season we'd do the same, we'd drive 3 hours from Evansville, where we are, get up in the morning, probably after a night out, get up in the morning, drive 3 hours, 4 hours in the car to play a game and then drive 3 hours back just to get a game of football.
Crazy, eh? And then you came back, was it a trial with Celtic you had?
No, I had the trial with Celtic before I left, really. So I was playing with Celtic under 17s, really, but I wasn't good enough at the time. So when I came back from America, or as I was coming back, I played in an indoor game, like, because there was no outdoor football in America at the time, so it was like the best young players that graduated from college played in this indoor game. It was never going to suit me. So that was the only kind of football that was available in America. So I had to come back. So I wrote to all the English clubs looking for a trial. And the only club that got back to me was Leeds. So I was kind of booked in for a trial there, sort of July time. So came back to Falkirk and stayed at home at Falkirk, just trying to get myself fit. But unbeknown to me, my dad had contacted Falkirk saying, can I do pre-season with him? Before I went down to Leeds. So Jim Jeffries and Billy Brown, who were the management team at the time, said no problem. So I didn't know anything about this. My dad says, you're going down to Falkirk. He was just walking out of the house, I think. So I went down to Falkirk, started training there. I was 22. I was in the away dressing room with all the young boys, like 17, all the scholars, 16, 17, 18. And all the first team players in the other dressing room. So just went in there, and after about 2 or 3 weeks trained and must have done okay, Jim offered me a contract.
And how was Jim and Billy Brown for you, a young player coming through into the first team?
They were brilliant with hindsight. It was hard at the time, you know, because they were straightforward. Like, I'd come from America, so you can imagine what it's like there with the coaching you get there and the, you know, their ideas.
Everything's
the
awesome.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Everyone's pats on the back and you get treated well, and then you're back into Scotland and it's reality kicks in, it's mortgages and bonuses and, you know, kids, families, all the rest of it. So I'd gone for this environment whereby it was enjoying yourself and having a good time and, you know, still doing well and still professional, but not professional, sorry, amateur, but trying to act like a professional. And then you come back to all of a sudden you're in a dressing room with John Hughes, Ian McCall, Morris Johnson, you know, and Billy Brown and Jim Jeffries, who are, you know, old school in terms of, you know, what they demanded. And a lot of good lessons there, and a lot of great memories and great times.
Can you remember the big players and the management team going through you as a young kid?
Yeah, they were. Like, I was older, you know, so I was 22, 23, so I wasn't a kid. Mm-hmm. But it was just black and white, you know, there was nothing in between. It was just, you know, the teacups flying off the wall and stand up shouting in your face, the hairdryer treatment. You know, that was normal. That was kind of just day to day, and you just hoped it wasn't you. You'd come in at half time and think and get your head down and hope you got away with it at half time, but it worked. You know, we were really successful at Falkirk. We got promoted for Division One. We got in the Premier League. I think we finished fourth one season. We were going for Europe. You know, we can remember beating Rangers at Ibrox, can remember beating Celtic at Brockville. You know, we had a really good team and a really good spirit and great times looking back.
You said Jim was a quiet one, but Billy wouldn't let him.
Billy was always, you know, anybody knows Billy or, you know, knows what he's like. He'd kind of wind Jim up. You know, he'd be, kind of let him away with that, Billy. Kind of let him do that, Jim. You see what he did there, Jim? And Jim would just be, take the bait, take the bait, and then be right in your face. But they were great. You know, obviously still see them and still speak to them. Jim and Billy took me to Hearts after that. So a big part of my career, getting me started, you know, giving me an opportunity. Back in May, I was young, a young player with a weird kind of background. So to actually give me the opportunity, you know, I was really grateful for that.
And was going to Hearts with them a no-brainer?
It was. I'd probably stayed at Falkirk too long. I had opportunities to leave, and it never really happened. And it was time to leave. You know, Falkirk was where I was from, so I just had to go and try something different. And Hearts was a step up at the time. You know, Hearts was a bigger club. Falkirk were kind of going backwards a wee bit, struggling, and looked like they were going to get relegated. So going to Hearts was a no-brainer. It was actually either go to Hearts or go to Hibs. That was my choice at the time, and I met them. Bill McMurdo was my agent at the time. And we went and met Hibs and Hearts on the same day through in Edinburgh. So that was really interesting. Went and met Alec Miller in the morning, and he told me where he wanted me to play and this and that, and met Jim and Billy in the afternoon and did the same and ended up signing for Hearts.
Was it purely down to Jim and Billy that you went? You chose Hearts?
No, 100 quid a week. 100 quid a week, extra. No, of course it was. It was Billy and Jim. They were. I knew what I was getting with them, and you know, I was excited to go and work with them again. I enjoyed working with them the first time, and then, as I said, kind of had a bad time for a couple of years. So it was. I wanted to go and enjoy my football again. Mm-hmm.
Talk us through that game where 4 years got sent off. What's your memory of that?
It was at Ibrox. We had a good team. Our Hearts team was good. It was Colin Cameron and Stevie Fulton, Gary Naismith, Neil Poynton, John Robertson, you know, so it was a good team, and we went to Ibrox. I can't remember the situation, but I remember getting sent off. I think I was Pasquale Bruno was another one. I think I was the second one that got sent off. But then the door just kept opening. It's like, is that half time? No, it's not half time. I've been sent off. Was that full time? No, I've been sent off. And you know, we obviously eventually ended up with seven men. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one more man and they've got to abandon the game. Rangers took it easy on us, to be honest. I think it was 3-0 maybe, from memory, 3-0, 4-0, but it could have been 10 or 11. But just one of those occasions where your emotions take over. And
how would Jim react to that after the game four? He's getting sent off.
No. I think I've blocked that one out.
The most famous moment in a Hearts trip, Scottish Cup final, beat Rangers.
Yeah.
Did you always feel, you said you had a good team there, did you always feel you could beat them going into the final?
We did, and that's 20 years ago, which is scary. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago this summer. And still speak to a lot of boys from that team and still got great memories of that time. And we definitely did. You know, we were, that season we felt we had a chance to win the league. You know, we really did. Us Rangers were strong coming into that 9 in a row team. Celtic probably weren't quite as strong, but trying to get back. And we felt we had a chance to win the league. And right up until the last probably 3, 4, 5 games of the season, we felt we were in about it. So we had no fear in terms of Rangers and Celtic beating them. But we'd had some disappointments. Hearts, especially in the Cup, you know, they didn't have a lot of luck in the Cup for a long, long period of time. So we'd lost to Rangers in another Cup final when Gazza scored 2 goals out of nothing and kind of stole it away from us. So, and then Hearts had had the, you know, the bad one against Rangers. And before that, I wasn't involved in that one. And so this was kind of like, it's now or never. We've got to go and try and win here. And Stevie Fulton scored, you know, almost straight away. Before
the Scottish Gazza?
The Scottish Stevie Gazza, exactly. He was talented boy, and great lad, great fun, and really, really good player.
How was the celebrations after the open top bus, and then was there a night out?
There was. There was a drug test after the game. I think it was Fulty that was getting drug tested, which was a worry. So we were in for ages. We were sitting on the bus. So by the time he came, I think it was him, by the time he came out, the boys were absolutely steaming on the bus. You know, so before we actually left, it wasn't Hamden, sorry, it was Celtic Park. So before we left Celtic Park, it was, you know, it was all over. So by the time we got back to Edinburgh, and the turnout was incredible. We came round the bypass and along Gorgie Road, so 200-300 metres for Tynecastle, all these people. So the bus was slowing down, you know, it couldn't actually get through all the people. So the boys thought it was a good idea to get on top of the bus. So I can always remember the boys out through the skylights on the top of the bus going along Gorgie Road. I'm not sure you get away with that, you know, now. Uh-huh. But so the boys had a few beers on the roof and just slowly going along Gorgie Road and round and then into Tynecastle and then back in the bus and then getting off. And I can always remember getting off, and I think Hazel Irvine was there for the BBC. Maybe Chick Young was there interviewing the boys as they came off the bus, and they were
gone
all over the place. Oh, I have to watch them again.
You were flying at Hearts. Did you always fancy playing down south?
I did. I wanted to go and play in England. I'd said about Leeds right at the start, having an opportunity to go down there, and that never happened because I got the contract at Falkirk. So I always had it in my mind that I wanted to go down and test myself. I was playing for Scotland at the time as well, so I'd got involved in the Scottish setup. So you mix with the boys who are playing down in England, you hear what they're saying about it, and you know, obviously have your worries, am I good enough, will I be all right? And I, you know, played with these lads and thought I could handle that. So I was like 28, 29 at the time. So I was getting on, so I thought, I want to get down there, I want to test myself, I want to see, you know, if I can play at that league. The Premier League wasn't what it is now, but it was still, you know, a great league. Yeah. So opportunity came up to go to Everton. Walter Smith was the manager, which was a massive pull as well, obviously being, you know, a Rangers fan, and Walter being a Rangers legend and being the manager of that great Rangers team, when he wanted you and I had the opportunity to go down there, I just had to make it happen. So ended up phoning out with Jim Jeffries, which wasn't great.
Did he not want you to go, obviously?
He didn't. It was different in those days because, you know, you're still contracted and, you know, I was coming to the end of my contract, but I was older. So they wanted to get some money for me. Mm. And so they got a bit of money, but probably know what they thought they should have got. Mm-hmm. So it was quite difficult and I didn't enjoy it, wasn't it? Because Jim and Billy had been great for me, but I knew my time was up and I had to go down.
Mm-hmm. And how was Walter? Brilliant?
Brilliant, yeah. It was difficult. Everton, a great club, you know, and a top, in my mind, a top 6 club in England, you know, always should be. But we went down there and it was a relegation battle. You know, the club was in turmoil. Walter was spending more time with bank manager, I think, than he was with the team, just trying to keep the club afloat and as well as trying to keep it in the Premier League. So it was really worrying times. Myself, Kevin Campbell signed, who basically kept us up on his own. Scott Gemmell signed as well, who did really well. So we went in at a team that was really struggling against relegation and, you know, staying up, because Everton had never been in the Premier League. So there was some pressure involved in that group of players to actually keep them in the Premier League.
Did you ever see Walter hit the hairdryer?
Yeah, and Archie.
Did you get it? Or?
I wasn't bad. I think he quite liked me, to be honest. But Archie was, you know, similar to Jim and Billy in that setup in terms of, you know, it wasn't a good cop, bad cop. It was bad cop, bad cop. You know?
Was it? Archie's nuts, isn't he?
But they were, you know, they
had players liked them.
The players liked them and they wanted to win. Mm-hmm. You know, so they installed in you that you've got to win. You've got to try and win. You've got to do all you can to win. And, you know, if you weren't doing it, they'd tell you.
Uh-huh. So Walter leaves and Davy Moyes came in.
Yeah.
What was it he done that revolutionised the whole club?
I think he got a level of finance, which, you know, obviously helped. He brought in his methods. He was a young coach, you know, at the time. He was up and coming. He'd done really well at Preston. So he had lots of ideas about things that he felt needs to happen at football clubs. So he brought in fitness coaches. He brought in French fitness coaches, Italian fitness coaches. He brought in a lot more staff and probably a lot more analysis of the game and a lot more sort of stop, start and training, things like that. Whereas Walter was more about getting the players comfortable, getting them enjoying the football, getting them, you know, in a good environment. Whereas David Moyes was more coaching, more sort of technical and tactical and the way he thought about it. So it was a real change, but we had success. You know, we brought in some really good players as well, which always helps.
Uh-huh. Who were the top players that you brought in? Pienaar, wasn't it? Was it?
Yeah, I mean, there was so many good players. You know, it felt like for me every season he was trying to replace me every season. You know, he always brought in a centre half. He brought in Stubbsy to start with, and we eventually played together. He brought in, I don't know if these names mean anything. You'd be like, well, Materazzi, you definitely know that name. Per Kroldrup, who was a Danish international. Yeah, Matteo Ferrari, who was an Italian international. So it just seemed like always bringing in new players. Thomas Gravesen came in. So there was, actually, Thomas Gravesen was before David Moyes, but it was just Tim Cahill, you know, Andy Johnson, James Beattie, you know, just top Premier League players at that time, just bringing them to Everton. Richard Wright, the goalkeeper. Probably missing a few out here, but it just felt like constantly, you know, there was upgrades in the players. And we had the lads who had been there before, myself and Lee Carsley and Kev Kilbane and that, we were always fighting to keep our places, always trying to stay involved with the new regime.
Uh-huh. See, him being a younger manager, would he lean on the older players? Would he bring you in and talk?
He would. He was clever. The first thing he did when he came in, he got all the senior players in and, you know, sort of had one-on-one meetings with them, asked them what they thought, what was good, what was bad, what could we do better? And kind of interviewed you almost as he came in. So he was clever in terms of getting as much information as he can and asking you what you thought about the club at that time.
Mm-hmm. 2005, you finished fourth in the league.
Yeah.
Great achievement. Villarreal beat you in the Champions League qualifier.
Yeah.
Were they just a top team?
They were. But us getting into that Champions League was like winning the league. You know, that was, we finished above Liverpool, which is, you know, if you don't know about Liverpool as a city, obviously the Everton-Liverpool rivalry is massive. And Everton hadn't finished above Liverpool for years or really had any bragging rights over Liverpool for a long, long time. So that was massive. We actually finished above them. We thought, you know, we stopped them getting in the Champions League, which was great. Then they win the Champions League, which is typical for down there. So they actually ended up, so it turned from being us stopping them to getting in the Champions League to them potentially winning it, saying, well, we can't have five English clubs in the Champions League, so we'll have to stop Everton. So there would have been civil war if that was the case. But no, we qualified, we finished fourth, as I said, like winning the league. And then always remember sitting in the canteen. So Belfield, the old training ground, which is like an old traditional, Everton had been there, I don't know, 50 years. And it was like somebody's house, and we're sitting upstairs in the canteen as we were making the draw. And Mikel Arteta, another great signing, was there. And they were doing the draw. So they do the draw, and he's like, whoever we get, we don't want Villarreal. Any team bar Villarreal, because they were.
Who was it, Raquelme or not?
Raquelme, Forlan, what was the other one? Midfield player, really good Spanish midfielder.
Cazorla, I think that was it. He was there Arsenal,
as well. Yeah, and Senna. Just had some top players. So you're thinking, you know, because we had a good team. We're thinking we've got a chance. And then we got them, still had a chance, played them at Goodison, lost 2-1, went back over to Spain, we've drawn 1-1, and we have a corner, and Duncan scores for a corner, Duncan Ferguson scores for a corner, Kalina, the referee, rules it out. And you just think in that moment, you know, because we had them at the time, if we'd have scored that, as everybody says, we probably went through, but just really good times, really exciting, massive games, and, you know, very close to getting the Champions League proper.
How was the big man, Ferguson?
Duncan, brilliant. He's really talented. Just getting him on the pitch was the hardest bit. You know, when he was on the pitch, he's the best captain I've ever, or one of the best captains, I should say, I've ever played with, in terms of actually getting around the boys, actually getting them motivated, getting them going before the game. You know, he was really passionate about his football, loves his football. I still speak to Duncan now and see him, obviously, he's at Everton coaching, and when I'm at the games, I see him and catch up with him, and loves his coaching, loves his football, which people don't really appreciate how into his football is and how much he cares about it. But in the dressing room before the game, he was fantastic. When he was up for it and he was on it, he was really a real leader and somebody you wanted to follow and somebody you wanted to be. You know, if you're on the pitch, somebody you wanted beside you.
And Faddy told us that he loved his pigeons as well.
He did. And I was actually at Everton not long ago. I went in, I think it was my daughter was playing there, actually, and I went into Everton to watch her. And I see somebody over on the 23's pitch with his big basket. And it's Dunk over with the pigeons, just letting them go. So that was only a few months ago. And so he's still heavily into that and loves that. And, you know, he's always been interested in it. And I think probably just a ways and means of getting away for the football.
If Faddy said he'd sit up the back of the bus at away games with just a vest on the pigeon bucket.
Yeah.
Brilliant,
Yes, he's...
Another guy you mentioned there, everyone who comes on will ask about played on, Mad Tommy Gravison.
Yeah, Tommy was a character. It was Walter and Archie that actually signed him, and he runs, I can always remember him running onto the training pitch, his first day, his shorts pulled right up, his T-shirt, you know, muscle T-shirt, and really talented player, but just off the wall. You know, genuinely just a mad fella, just, like, good, but just off the wall. And, you know, we did really well at Everton, he was in that team, and he actually left Everton for so our team to go to Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was the level he was at the time. So it was him and Lee Carsley in midfield, and Cars, who's another mate of mine, always says they tried to sign him because they looked very similar on the pitch. I think one was 16, one was 18. They're both bald, they're both kind of stocky shaped. So Cars says they were trying to sign him because they actually wanted to sign a holding midfielder. And they take Tommy, and Tommy's like, no holding midfielder, he's anything but he's all over the place. But they actually signed Tommy, and again, back at Belfield, Real Madrid has signed him. Tommy's in the canteen, and he didn't want to go.
Did he?
Real Madrid has sent, like, this private jet, and he just was like, Tommy, your car's here, the plane's waiting for you. And he's like, all right. And he could just tell he didn't want to go. Uh-huh. You know, but...
You love it, Everton.
He did, he really enjoyed it.
How was he, like, a hard manager like Walter Smith? How did he cope with a guy like Tommy?
I think Walter was really good at handling the personalities, and that was one of his big strengths. You know, worked with them all with Gaza and, you know, all that team, and, you know, Everton as well. We had people like Ginola and Mark Hughes and, you know, real big characters and names in the games. And Walter didn't have a problem with that. He was actually really good at dealing with people because, you know, he was a good man. You know, he understood people and he could talk to them on their level, and they respected him for what he'd done in the game. So he handled them. It genuinely wasn't a problem. I never seen Andy, you know, that he couldn't handle. And Tommy fell in that category. You know, he was off the wall, but he was a match winner, so he had to try and get the best out of him.
And he also chatted all the way through the Old Firm game.
He would always be chatting, you know, and he'd always be mate. And like I walked to his first Old Firm game. It wasn't my first one. Walked out into the tunnel, you know, and you know what the tunnel's like. Players are scared to look at each other. The television cameras are there, and so I walked out. I don't think I was captain at that time. Walked out, and Tommy's on the opposite side, trying not to look at him. So walking out, and he says, "You go, hey mate, how you doing, mate?" Everybody was mate, and I'm like, "Fucking, I can't look at him." In the tunnel before the Rangers Celtic game, and in the same game, I remember coming back in at halftime. I can't remember the score. I don't know what the score was. Come back into the dressing room, and Barry came in and says, "Fucking, what about your mate? What do you mean?" He says, Gravis, and he's saying to me, "Hey mate, do you know any nice restaurants in Glasgow?"
While the game's gone.
At half time, he's walking back in, he's talking to Barry, and Barry's like, do you know any nice restaurants tonight? I can maybe go out. And Barry's going, "What's he?"
Is he wired up? Right, brilliant. Another player who came through the ranks at Everton, world superstar, Rooney.
Yeah.
How good was he at 16, 17?
He was brilliant. You know, we'd heard about him at Everton through the age groups as being special, and it was towards the end of Walter's time there. He was sort of 15, 16, started training with us, and you could see straight away he was a man in his body. You know, his body was developed, he was strong, he was powerful. He came around and trained a few times. He was on the bench towards the end of whatever season that would have been. So you could tell that, you know, it was only a matter of time before he became involved. And as he trained, you know, he could just see he had no fear. Mm-hmm. He felt like he should have been there. You know, he felt like he was 16 training in the first team. He felt like he was the best player. You know, and he was just a nice kid as well. You know, he was genuinely a Scouse lad. So just came into the group. Everybody liked him. Duncan was his hero. So Duncan took him under his wing and I'm sure helped him. And so Wayne would just come in and train away and be the last in. He'd go on goals. If the boys were doing shooting, he'd end up going the goals. He thought he was the best goalie. Thought he was the best player. And then he'd stay at the training ground, have his meal, whatever, and then get off and then go home, and you'd hear about him out playing with his mates, playing five-a-side in the street with his mates.
After training,
just running around. And I'm sure Walter and then David Moyes latterly would drive him nuts, but he just loved his football, just enjoyed his football, and just was a typical Scouse lad coming in, playing for his heroes and mixing with his, you know, Duncan Ferguson's and people like that, who I'm sure he did idolise at the time.
Brilliant stories, mate. You left Everton 2007.
Yeah.
Did you anticipate getting such a move at 36, 37?
Well, I was getting yearly contracts at Everton, and kind of the manager didn't want me to leave. David Moyes didn't want me to leave. I was playing less and less, you know, but he always kind of offered me a contract. I had opportunities to leave. I can remember meeting Steve Bruce to go to Birmingham, and then Brian Robson to go to West Brom, and having opportunities to leave to good clubs and getting longer contracts and probably more money. I was on at Everton, but it just didn't feel right in terms of leaving at that time. I loved my time at Everton. I had 8 years there and I wasn't really desperate to leave. I might have maybe got a coaching job or been involved in some way, shape or form there. So I had no real intentions of just kind of jumping or going somewhere I wasn't sure about. And then got a phone call for Walter. You know, he'd left Scotland, he was going back in at Rangers, and he asked me if I fancied coming up. And, you know, like, just at times in your life, you're just like, that's the right thing. Mm-hmm. So I just knew it was the right thing. So I, you know, told David Moyes, went and spoke to him, says, "Look, I've got this opportunity." I'm sure he already knew about it, but "I've got this opportunity to go up, I really want to go." And he was like, "No problem." So it kind of happened overnight. I knew it was the right thing. I was in the car driving up the next day, and you know, obviously a Rangers supporter had grown up. Mm-hmm. Thought the chance had passed me by. I had opportunities in the past at Falkirk, Hearts, and Everton less so maybe to go to Rangers, so it never really happened. So thought the chance had passed me by, and then eventually it did. It came up at 37, so straight up the road.
Did it shock you how, obviously you were a supporter, I know, but playing with Everton, did it shock you how big a club Rangers were when you first signed for them?
No, when I first signed, I knew obviously playing against them, going to Ibrox and, you know, going as a supporter and going as an opposition player, you knew an idea what it was. But when we went up, or when I went up, we were struggling. We were fighting for second place. We, you know, we're going up against Aberdeen. We had to win some games between now and the end of the season to finish second, which got you in the Champions League, which was massive. Excuse me. So we managed to finish second. We beat Celtic, which was massive. We hadn't beat Celtic for a while. Ugo scored the overhead kick at the game at Parkhead, so that was a great experience straight away. We managed to finish second, which at the time was success, and I was offered another contract for the season, so I must have done all right. Mm-hmm. Got a contract for next season, which I was delighted about, and we had to go and try and win the league. We were obviously in the Champions League, so I'm at Rangers, and I've gone for being on the bench at Everton to, you know, being involved with Rangers in the Champions League qualifiers and try to win a league.
Uh-huh. Kevin Thompson says when, like, CSL first came, maybe the standard of player wasn't as good as it was later. and Walter tried to install a hard to beat mentality, yeah, especially against Celtic, rough them up.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I would. Well, it was real mixed bag when I came in. There was good players there, like Barry was there, and you know, there was a good level of player, and there was a lot of foreign lads who'd come in with the previous manager, Paul Le Guin, who, you know, without being too harsh, they weren't good enough for Rangers at the time. You know, they were, I'm sure they were doing their best, but they weren't good enough for the level that was required to compete with Celtic, and that was reflected in where they were. So Walter came in. I'm sure he made the bans when he came in. The first thing he did was probably got me and Ugo in. So he got a couple of centre backs in. He got a couple of people who had been around the block a wee bit, and he started to build his team and started to add quality. He got some good younger players in: Kevin Thompson, Stephen Naismith, Stephen Whittaker, Chris. Well, Chris was already there, but just that type of player. You know, he kind of started to put Rangers back on the map again and started to give us, you know, a wee bit competition with Celtic, and added some good players, you know, Carlos Cuellar, good foreign players as well, who came in, who were of the right standard and who could pull a few players up and, you know, and be Rangers players.
Mm-hmm. How was the standard for Everton in the Premier League to coming back up?
The Premier League was a good standard, you know, it was really good standard. Every team you played had good players. You know, in my time there, you know, as a defender, you were up against Zola at Chelsea, you were up against, you know, Sheringham or York and Cole at United. You were up against Wanchope, you know, even the lesser teams, you know, if you're going to, or the perceived lesser teams, always had really good strikers, really good players. Newcastle, Shearer, Ferdinand, you know, like that. That was, you know, the level of player. So week in, week out, you were up against a top player. Mm-hmm. Arsenal with Henry, and, you know, it's, thinking back, it was crazy. And then you come up to Scotland, and obviously the standard of the individual player week in, week out wasn't the same. It was still tough, but it was a fight every week. You know, at Rangers, it was a cup final every week. So wherever you were going, whoever you were playing against, whatever the level of the player was, it was just really difficult. And I think, you know, a lot of players have found that to be the case. You know, really good players coming up to Scotland and struggling because of the intensity and the passion and the, you know, the willingness to win that all Scottish players have.
Mm-hmm. Later on, Mendes, Davis, Kuzan, yeah, good players coming. Did you feel then we could dominate the Scottish League for a couple of years?
You definitely felt like, you know, when you see people like that coming in, you're thinking, this is serious, you know, and we've got a chance here. And, you know, you're playing in European games. Champions League games, UEFA Cup games and Cup finals and League deciders and Celtic Rangers games. So you go onto the pitch and can always remember looking around the dressing room before a Celtic game, and you know, you see McGregor there, you go, I'm happy with that. You'll see Jelovic there, you go, happy with that. You'll see Lee McCulloch there, you'll see, happy with that. Barry Ferguson, happy with that. So you're looking around the dressing room, you're going, I'm going into a big game, but, you know, you're going in with a bit of ammunition, you're going in with boys you know you can trust and you know that will turn up.
Uh-huh. How do the Old Firm games compare to, the Merseyside derby?
Everybody always asks that, and, you know, like, I've got to be careful because I had 8 years, I was at the Merseyside derby at the weekend, you know, I went to the game and it's not the same. I can't hide that. It's still passionate and it's still, the Evertonians care so much, you know, they're desperate to beat Liverpool, but, you know, Rangers Celtic, just, it's life or death. You know, that's how it feels when you're playing in it, you're coaching in it, it's life or death. And if it doesn't feel like that when you're involved in it, then I think there's something wrong.
Uh-huh. It could turn even the mildest of man, can't it, they games?
It can, yeah.
You were scrapping a few times,
didn't
it? What is it that happens in them? You just lose your head, huh?
You just care, I think. You genuinely care. I mean, I was always quite like that, you know. I like to think I'm a decent guy off the pitch, but on the pitch, I'm, like you say, the switch kind of goes and you just get involved, you want to win. And because, you know, the more you're involved, that you know, if you don't win, what's going to happen afterwards? You know, the recriminations and, mm-hmm, you know, the problems that are going to happen, and, you know, that feeling of losing against Celtic in a big game, it takes a long time to go away.
Was Walter brilliant in the Old Firm games? Team talks and half times and...
It wasn't complicated what he did. You got the feeling he trusted you, you got the feeling that he believed in you, you got the feeling that you were going to win. You know, we didn't win them all, but he always went into the game thinking, we've got a good chance here. If we do our job and we get a wee bit of luck, then we've got a better chance. I always felt, every game we were going in, I always felt we were going to win.
UEFA Cup 2008, great run for Rangers that year. How demanding was it that run, because it was quite back, quite a lot of the games are backs to the wall, defending a lot.
It was
in the games.
And you know, we started the season in the Champions League, so we went through the qualifiers, got into the Champions League, went through the group stages, finished third, went into the UEFA Cup. We're still in the League Cup, still in the Scottish Cup, still going for the league. So, you know, it was everything, but it was the best. You know, it's what you want as a footballer. You know yourself, it's, you know, the games are easy. It's what happens in between the training and the, you know, that's the hard bit of being a footballer. The games themselves look after themselves. And I think we had 68 games that season. I think I was 38, 39 at the time, and I played maybe 65, I don't know, 65 games, and people go, how can you play that? But it was easy, you know, because all you were doing was just playing, recovering, playing again. And like, as I said earlier, having a manager who trusts you, you've got that belief and that mentality that, you know, you can do anything. And that's how it felt at the time. You know, we were, at the end of the season, we were still in the UEFA Cup, we'd won the League Cup, we were going for the league, and we were still in the Scottish Cup. So it was a really exciting time. And we're playing against Barcelona, we played against Sporting Lisbon, we played against Werder Bremen, Fiorentina, you know, and the other semi-final was Zenit against Bayern Munich. So, like, you know, what's not enjoyable?
Would Walter look after you differently, being an older guy?
He would, but he looked after everybody differently. I think that was his skill. You know, my family lived down south, so I was up here on my own, and he'd say to me, go home for a few days, just go home and spend a few days with your family. And I'd be like, no, I want to stay and train, because that's, I enjoy doing that. But occasionally I'd go home, and he just put the ball in your court. He says, if you want a couple of days, have a couple of days. The boys at Rangers would probably tell you different. You know, they'd probably say I was never there, but he was brilliant. You know, how a man managed people, and he trusted people, and he treated you like an adult, you know, and that's what you want, especially at my age, in my circumstance. And, you know, he was fantastic. Just his experience and his aura and his presence was exactly what a Rangers manager should be.
Mm-hmm. At what point did you think you could get to the final? Did you ever talk about that during the run?
No, it was, you know, you never thought it was realistic, you know, because of the teams we're talking about and the teams you're playing against, you know, Zenit, St. Petersburg and Bayern Munich. And we were, like, if you looked at our team on paper, it was a million miles away from that. It genuinely was. And it used to be the case, I think it was 0-0 at home and then try for a goal away from home, or just try and nick a result. It was never, you know, we never really outplayed Endale, or we never really smashed Endale. It was always kind of, all the games, as you said, were tight, and it was always kind of nip and tuck. The first game, and that would have been in the UEFA Cup, was against Panathinaikos. And I think we drew 0-0 at home. I might be wrong with it. 0-0 at home. Then we went away. And Walter wanted it. It was a million miles away actually being successful in the competition. We're trying to win the league, you know. Won the league for a long time at Rangers, so we had to win the league. That was a priority. And we were in Panathinaikos, and they scored, and we were 1-0 up. Now, I think Nacho scored about 10 minutes for the end. I could just see Walter in the dugout like that, going, fuck, you know, what's that? You know, that's another two games, another trip. But then from that, it just kind of snowballed. And, you know, you got that habit, that winning habit. And like I say, just playing game after game. But, you know, it was an exciting campaign. And when you look back to think the games you played in, and, you know, it didn't end up the way we wanted it to end up, obviously, but it was a great sort of experience to be involved in it.
You say on paper you were miles off the teams. So what was it that got you then? Just the team spirit?
I think it was, and we just believed in ourselves, and we were well coached, obviously. We were well managed, we had belief, we had, you know, Walter always used to say, you know, there's no point in being a winner if you've no good winners in your team. So I think in that team there's a lot of boys who wanted to be winners. Mm-hmm. And regardless of who you were playing or what the opposition was, and in Europe, usually had better players, that we always felt we had a chance.
Did you not fancy a penalty in the semis, nah? Being no back to America days, nah?
Actually, that's where it stemmed from. I can remember taking a penalty in America. So at the end of the season, you'd go to the finals. It was called the NCAA finals. So you had to qualify for these finals. And I think it was my first year, but we went to a penalty shooter, and I was like, yeah, I'll take a penalty. Saved out. And I'm like, fuck. Mentally scarred for that. So when that UEFA Cup semi-final came around, I think I was behind the goalie on the list to actually take the penalties.
Where does that night rank in your career? semi-final?
Oh, it was way up there because you could tell what it meant to the club and what it meant to, you know, the people and Walter as well. You know, it was for him as a coach to be involved in European finals, and, you know, Rangers had been to a few European finals in their history, but not many. So we had an opportunity as a team to actually be the most successful Rangers team ever, which would have been incredible. You know, to win the treble and to win a European trophy. Mm-hmm. So that would have been a once in a lifetime, once in the history of the club. So that was within touching distance. So that was, you know, a special opportunity. It never worked out for reasons that were, with hindsight, understandable, but at the time we felt like it could do it all.
The final, do you feel like you've never done yourself justice, or were they a top team?
They were a top team, and, you know, but you look at the final and it's a one-off game. Mm-hmm. It's in Manchester, which was great. You know, that experience with the fans and everything that were there was out of this world. And I was living in Manchester, so it was a home game for me. So it was surreal at the time, the whole experience. But, like, that whole European campaign, we'd kind of done the two legs really well. You know, we'd managed to get draws and put the pressure on the other team. The away goals were really important for us. And then you go into this one-off game and it's completely different. It's a cup final. Again, they've probably got better players, and you're looking and you're going, this has got to be really difficult. So I've never even watched that game back, to be honest, which I will do at some point, but it just kind of felt like it passed us by a wee bit. Mm-hmm. You know, even the build-up was a bit kind of subdued. We never actually went through the fans to the game. We went round, so we never really saw it. We went into the stadium, and it was a real anti-climax, obviously, in terms of the result, but it was just, looking back on it, the whole thing was a real, we never felt like we got the whole kind of feeling of what it meant to everybody, which is a shame.
Uh-huh. You spoke about Walter Smith, how important he was. We've had Ali McCoist on, and obviously Kenny McDowell, who I know. How good were they two for the laughs and the banter?
The whole environment at Rangers at that time was brilliant. Walter was obviously the boss and controlled everything. Coisty and Kenny was the organisation. You know, Kenny had everything running to plan. Training was great. Coisty was, you know, involved in everything, and life and soul, everything. Durante was around as well, obviously, and, you know, very funny and had his inputs and helped individuals and stuff. And Jim Stewart doing the goalkeeping. So the staff were top, you know, great people, really relaxed environment, good fun. You know, you're going into your work every day, you're enjoying it. Coisty's playing in the games when he can, scoring goals. Walter's just...
Did you kick him there?
Not really, no. But he was still the assistant manager, so you had to be careful because you wanted to be in the team, but he'd always try and get involved in the games and always be shooting at McGregor, taking penalties at McGregor and having a competition. Very competitive, obviously, Coisty, and, you know, that's shone through, and I think that's shone through the full club, really, that kind of instinct he had as well.
After Barry done the old Vs, 2009, you get the captaincy.
Yeah.
Do you remember how it came about? Walter come and speak to you?
It did. And Walter was always speak to me anyway, you know, with different things. And he'd always had a way of kind of sidling up to you. And as you're walking in for training and you just walk in chat, he'd say, just come in for a chat. And so go into his wee office downstairs, which was like, he had big office upstairs and the wee office downstairs, so he'd always did most of your chatting in the wee office downstairs. So he'd pull you in regularly, and he was just saying, he's very understated and, you know, kind of plays things down, Walter. That's kind of the way he was, and just go, I've got a wee bit of problem and I need you to help me out here, and would you mind being captain? You know, what's happened with Barry, and it's no ideal, and, you know, we need to get through this because we're going for the league. You know, it was massive at the time, and stuff as well was... wasn't he great, and felt sorry for Barry. Barry was a good teammate and a top player. A top player. You know, all the players I played with, he was a top, top player. So that was going to be a big loss. And obviously the goalie as well, who was a top, top player as well. And so the circumstances were really difficult, and we just had to get through it. But we had to get through it, and we had to win games.
Could you still be happy and proud to be in the Rangers captain, even though somebody, your pal, had been...
It was really weird, and, you know, the key thing always is the club and getting results for the club. So we went up to Tannadice on the last day of the season, having to get a result to win the league in a massive game, and managed to get the result. And I always remember Walter saying, look, I think you and Barry should lift the trophy. And I'd thought that myself anyway, but the fact he said that, and I was thinking that was just the right thing to do. So that was kind of made it all worthwhile. I'm sure Barry was, it wasn't ideal, he'd been through a difficult time, but the fact we both lifted the trophy on that day was, I think that was a good end to it.
So there was no awkwardness with Barry? Was Barry
all
right?
No, not at all. I think Barry subsequently, you know, he knew what he'd done was wrong and he regrets it. And I think, you know, the punishment he got, you know, was deserved. And I think he took it on the chin and he took it like a pro. And when he was asked, he came and played and did his bit. But it wasn't an ideal scenario for everyone. And you just had to try and make the best of it. And the best thing was winning the league. That was the best answer.
Uh-huh. Now, my dad struggled to get off the couch at 40. You won Writers' Player of the Year. How yeah. proud of you must have been, 40-year-old winning that?
I know, it was...
Was it a shock?
It was a shock, yeah, because I was never really... I won Player of the Year at Everton a couple of times, but I'm never that type of player. You know, defenders don't really win Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. I think it was more a sympathy one. As you said, like, at that age, you've got to give him some. You've got to give him an award of some sort, so what can we give him? But defenders don't usually win Player of the Years, and when you're in a successful team, usually it's the goal scorers that are getting the awards, and if goal scorers are getting awards, then usually your team's successful, so mm-hmm. that's usually a better indicator.
But do you feel like you deserved it, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Good.
I used to feel like I deserved it every year, but not everybody reciprocated that, but no, I didn't. Uh-huh.
So why did you leave Rangers? 2012, still had 6 months on your deal.
Yeah. I just felt I wasn't really playing. Well, I started playing. I got injured in a European game actually. It was against Malmo. So I got injured. I pulled my hamstring. I remember running for the ball in the corner at Ibrox, pulled my hamstring. So I was injured and the team was doing well. I got back fit, pulled my calf. So it felt like a long way back into the Rangers team at that time. I was living away from home. I gave it an opportunity to get back into the team. It wasn't really happening. I had great memories of Rangers. You know, Rangers were great for me. I was a Rangers supporter. I'd played for my club and I didn't want it to end on a bad note. So I went and spoke to the manager, Coisty, obviously at the time, and said, look, this isn't working. I don't want to be a sub. I don't want it to leave, you know, kind of drifting out here. It was January, so I don't want to leave after January and then you can't bring somebody in to replace me. So I think it's the right thing for me to leave and leave at the right time, give you an opportunity to bring somebody in to replace me. So I just felt it was the right thing to do. You know, and contract-wise, I had contract left, but Rangers had been great for me. So I just wanted to try and do the right thing, to be honest. And I just decided that was the right time and shook Coisty's hand, left on a great note, and you know, I had 5 unbelievable years there.
Yeah, great career. You go into coaching a wee spell at Sheffield United, and then you become Mark Warburton's assistant at Brentford.
Yeah.
When you first got the call about Rangers, how excited were you to get back there? Was there second thoughts about going there?
No, really, no. I was excited because I thought there was a massive opportunity. I'd actually been to the game, the Motherwell game, where Rangers didn't get up in the playoffs. Uh-huh. I did the TV, uh-huh. and I watched the game, and I was like, you know, it was a real low point for Rangers. Obviously, there was trouble at the game and you could tell the fans weren't happy. The team wasn't great and, you know, the players were kicking off on the pitch. So it was a real mess. It just felt like, you know, there was a big project to be done. So when we got, you know, the call after that, I said to Mark, you know, it's an unbelievable club. It's an unbelievable opportunity. He knows that anyway, but, you know, there is a lot of work to be done. So it's a massive project and it'll take time to, you know, to get it going in the right direction again. So it was a great challenge. We'd left Brentford, we had a great experience there, we had a really good team, some really good players, mm-hmm. and, you know, had half a chance of getting the Premier League with Brentford, so we didn't quite make it, we lost in the playoffs. So we're just looking for the next challenge, and Rangers was a massive challenge. We turned up, you know, eventually after getting the job, I think we had 9 players, and you know, we had to try and get Rangers promoted out of the Championship.
So you going back there as a coach, do you get that same feeling as you did when you first signed there as a player?
Yeah, it's, I got that same feeling every day going into Murray Park. You know, excited to be there, great environment to work in, great memories obviously for me. But then the best feeling is, you know, driving up to Ibrox. You know, you couldn't beat that. Just driving up there on match day and fans are coming in and you are walking through the front door and, you know, you're going into that dressing room and, you know, you walk out through that tunnel into that stadium. You just can't beat that as a, you know, as a Rangers fan and as a, you know, a Rangers employee, whatever position you're in.
Did it shock Mark a bit, the size of the club?
It did. You know, it did in terms of just day-to-day. Mm-hmm. You know, walking down the street, filling your car up with petrol, wherever you go, you know, there's somebody willing to give you a bit of advice or an opinion. So it is, that's Rangers, that's Celtic, you know, that's anybody that works up here or played for either of the clubs knows that and goes with the territory.
First year, yous were flying. What was the main difference as the second year? Why do you think it never went as well?
I think it was a step up. You know, the first year was difficult. I said we started with 9 players, so we had to get promoted. That was non-negotiable, so we had to get promoted. So we had to bring in some good young players. We had to have a bit of experience. We had to have a bit of knowledge. Lee Wallace and Kenny Miller gave us that, and we kind of installed a style of play that worked for us, and we had really good success. We got promoted. Beat Celtic in the semi-final. We lost to Hibs, unfortunately, in the final, and then we were going into a new season, and the expectations were going for 55, we've got to win the league, and we had to recruit, we had to improve the squad, we had a young squad, we had, you know, a squad that needed help to actually be even competitive in that league. So we brought in a few players, didn't quite work out. Obviously Joey, you know, we signed Joey, he was the best championship midfielder that season. It didn't work out at Rangers for whatever reason. We signed Jordan Rossiter, who was the best young English midfielder at that age. Signed him to come in. He got injured, that didn't quite work out. We signed Nico Crankyar, who came in, who got injured as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just seemed like things didn't quite work out for us in terms of how quickly people expected us to be where they felt they needed us to be. So the expectations were really high, and, you know, we didn't meet those expectations quickly enough for a lot of people.
See how you said at the start of that season, people were saying going for 55. Did you think you could win the league that year? Was that your aim?
You always think you can win the league, but if you look at it objectively, what right of Rangers coming back into the Premier League having no been there for 5 years with, you know, no disrespect to the lads we had in the squad, how can that team be expected to win the Premier League? And Celtic had improved. You know, Celtic realised that, I think, we'd beat them in the semi-final. We'd made some good signings, you know, by everybody's account at the time. We'd made some good signings, and Celtic reacted to that by bringing in a top-class manager and some top-class players. So they'd reacted to that, the sort of challenge that we'd brought to them. So the gap had become even bigger. So we had to try and bridge that gap, and it was really difficult. And with hindsight, it was never going to be achievable in that first season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we're showing now, there's still a gap there, and, you know, I'm not sure it's closed even now.
Just on the Joey Barton, do you think things could have been handled differently with him, or was that the only way it could have went?
I think it's difficult. You know, Joey was a top midfield player, undoubtedly, in the Championship. Watched lots of games, done our homework, and he was exactly what we needed. The position, the profile of player. But the biggest thing for me was Joey, and we signed Joey after we'd organised to go to America in pre-season to do, you know, our training over there, and Joey couldn't go. So we signed Joey after that. So Joey missed a couple of weeks with us before the season started. And that, with hindsight, was probably a problem. He probably wasn't as fit as we would have liked him being going into that season. And he was always kind of playing catch-up. And I think that was the thing. And the intensity of Scottish football is really hard. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to encounter, so it just never worked out, and, you know, that happens. That's life. Not every signing works out, and, you know, I think Joey had 8 or 10 games, so to judge somebody over 8 or 10 games is really unfair, and it became obvious that, you know, it wasn't working for either party, so I think the best conclusion to everybody was to move it on, and very quickly Joey came in, and then very quickly Joey went out, mm-hmm. and, you know, everybody moved on.
What about your thoughts on you leaving Rangers? Do you think you were given enough time?
No, I don't. You know, and I think Rangers is a you know, it's a big ship and it takes time to turn it around. And I think we had turned it around to a degree and we were going in the right direction. Made mistakes along the way, undoubtedly. You know, there's no doubt that not everything we did was right, but we did it for the right reasons. And disappointing to leave, you know, in the way we did, and, you know, to leave with that negative feeling, that bad feelings isn't nice, but, you know, it is what it is, and you can't change the past, and it would have been nice to be involved in, you know, getting Rangers back to winning leagues and winning cups and being part of that, but it wasn't to be, so you don't have regrets, you move on, and, you know, you're not happy with some of the things that panned out, but, you know, life's too short to, you know, to worry about that.
And what about the future? Will you stick with Mark, or would you go on your own?
I really don't know. I enjoyed working with Mark. You know, he's a good person, good coach, somebody you can work with day to day. Enjoyed that day to day. So, who knows what opportunity will come up? Working myself again, obviously had, you know, a short experience at Sheffield United. With hindsight, again, too early in my career, and not having the experience really to probably go into a club like that. So again, made mistakes on that. But 4 or 5 years down the line, undoubtedly be a better coach, better manager now. So I really don't know. I'm open. I'm doing a master's degree now in sporting directorship. I'm watching a lot of games. I'm doing some work with the PFA. So I've got a lot of interests and obviously a family as well. So just getting the right balance in life, really, I think. But football's always and always will be a big part of what I do. And, you know, the next steps, you know, it's got to be interesting. There's a lot of opportunities out there, and hopefully got, you know, a bit of time left in the game.
Davey, thanks very much, big man.
No problem.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Scotland.